Once upon a time, a nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a new kingdom and then return. He called 10 of his servants and he gave them seed money and said to them, engage in business until I come back. When he returned, having received that kingdom, he then ordered his servants to whom he had given the money. He called to them that he might know what they had gained by doing their business. The first came before him and said, your gift made 10 times more. And he said to them, well done, good servant, because you've been faithful in very little, you get authority over 10 cities. And the second came saying, look, your gift has made 5 times more. And he said to him, and you are going to be over 5 cities. Then another came saying, look, here's your seed money, which I put in a handkerchief, for I was afraid of you because you are a severe man. You take what you did not deposit, you reap what you did not sow. And he said to him, I will condemn you with your own words, you wicked servant. You knew that I was a severe man, taking what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money at least in a bank and come back and give what I collected it with interest? He then said to those who stood by, take the money from him and give it to the one who has 10 cities. And they said, he has 10 already. And he said, I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given, but from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. Now, that is not just a once upon a time story. Many of you, if you know scripture well, you've heard parables before. That's actually a parable of Jesus. Just instead of the word minas, I said seed money, and I skipped 2 sentences. Other than that, it's an actual parable that Jesus taught out of the Gospel of Luke. And so this is a parable that Jesus introduces with, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. It's like a master leaving, and while he's not directly there, God expects you to run his business. And if you don't, well, let's not bury his gifts and hide them in a handkerchief under our mattress, because that's not good. Today, we are starting a new sermon series called Mind Your Own Business. The outline and the graphic on the front of your bulletins, this sermon series, I'm just going to be honest, because I should be honest about things like that. I borrowed the outline of the sermon series from another group called Open Church. They provide sermon resources for churches certain times. I'll steal / borrow other sermon series. I always want to make sure I give credit when I do that, though, because there are certain things you don't need to reinvent the wheel for. And so I'm using some of someone else's material for this, but they publish it specifically for this purpose. Like I said, though, the sermon series, I like the title, I like the idea of it, I like this idea of minding your own business. For the sermon series, though, it's not the idea of mind your own business, leave me alone. It's mind your own business. If you have a business, you should mind it. You are supposed to mind your business. The parable of Jesus I just shared with you is an important reminder. God has given you seed money, resources for your time, resources of your talents, but also your financial resources, your treasure. And God expects you to run a business of some kind and return it to him with interest. He gives you this deposit of seed money to start a business in your life, and he expects you to return it somehow. Because we know the rest of the Bible, we know what kind of God is and what he expects of his followers. This business that we're talking about is a calling for you to be salt and light on this earth, for you to be a generous type of person, for you to help others, for you to bring them into a better place, for you to share the gospel with others. That's the type of business he is expecting of us. So, mind your own business. Help others mind theirs too, but also make sure you're minding yours. And that's what we'll be talking about in this sermon series. Before we can discuss how to mind our own business, though, I need to cover a little bit of foundational things here, because we first need to figure out if we can even, whether or not we're even capable of minding our own business. One, do we actually have the resources to start a business in God's kingdom? And two, do we even know what business we're supposed to start? And so, I have to cover a few foundational things first. Here's the first verse I want to cover. Proverbs 22:7. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. The borrower is slave to the lender is a very powerful statement. It's saying debt equals bondage. And that's scary knowing how America's economy works and many other developed nations' economies works. Too often we think of it as hyperbole, but think of it like this. Have you ever said, I would love to tithe? Or, I would love to give to that cause. Or maybe as James was up here talking about the library, it's, oh, I'd love to have helped them out with a large portion of buying their business. I'd love to pay $100 or $200 at the pancake fundraiser we had last week. but I'm struggling to pay the bills this month. I can't afford to do that. I'd love to take a missions trip. Maybe I'd love to adopt kids or help someone else adopt kids. And you genuinely mean these things. These aren't just you trying to get someone off your back. You genuinely wish you could do these things. But then reality sets in and it's, I can't because I've got all these other obligations that are financial that I have to do. That's the kind of bondage this verse is talking about. Your assets are a slave to the lender. If you ever feel like God's calling you to something, that's part of minding your business, and yet you feel too restrained to do it, I would think that's a bad thing, right? You ever feel like God is telling you, I'd like you to do this, and you go, I can't, God? That's not good if that is our response, right? For example, I got to experience this year, I learned of a problem that someone had, and I genuinely wanted to be generous with that person. There's been a few times where I feel like I'm supposed to be really generous with this person in particular, and I've tried to go out of my way just to bless them somehow, and at that moment in my life, I couldn't. And it stunk, like, because I'm used to being able to do that. This is not like a call for help or anything, but you remember my sermon series last one, where I had all the problems with my van? And then also, I'm a doctorate student, and I've made sure not to go into debt to get that degree. And so I just haven't had the flexibility of income to be as generous sometimes. And I was like, I really want to be nice, but I can't right now. So I tried to get some other people to be nice. And so, but you can't tell someone else, go be generous. You can't do that. It doesn't work like that, right? And so I just, it wasn't a good time, because I like to do that sort of thing. Maybe, though, the call for generosity is not enough for you. Maybe you're like, okay, that sounds nice. You didn't get to give away money. Maybe, though, think of it this way, with borrower or slave to lender kind of concept. Maybe you've been annoyed by it being broken again. Whatever the it is, your car is broken again, your HVAC system, your computer. I bet you can think of it. Oh, I just dropped my phone and the screen is cracked again. Every time it breaks, you wish you could replace it, but you literally can't without just going into more debt. You ever had anything that's, it's broken again? Why don't you replace that? Because I literally can't. Like, have you ever had that? And so you just kick the can a little further down the road with something. Maybe it's like one of you college students who are in here, and you're ready, because this happens during college. We know this actually from a study from Facebook. S&T is a great place to find a future spouse, right? Maybe Facebook actually did a study with the data they have. It is. It's in the top 10 schools to go to get married. So is my alma mater as well. But you can't afford a ring. And you're afraid maybe if you get married, you won't be able to afford a house. And so you really want to do this. You've got this passion to get married to someone. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I can't do that financially right now. Maybe it's something like, I wish I could be home with my kids. But your financial situation for your household is that both the adults in the house have to be working, and it's, oh, I can't be a stay-at-home parent, and we have to work full-time jobs. That's the kind of financial bondage described in Proverbs 22:7. It's you're a slave to the system if there's a situation where you are wanting to do something, you want to pursue God's plan that you think he has for your life, and you run into this wall of literal tangible resources and there's just not enough there. That's what this verse is talking about. I want to point us to another verse, Matthew chapter 6, verse 21. And this verse is, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is an important verse for us as well. We might be in financial bondage, we might not be, but we could also, or at the same time, have issues with this idea of priorities. And studies show that average Americans do have this. And guess what? It's very good chances you're average. If there wasn't really good chances that you're average, then average would be called something different. And so there, we've got some scary data. Did you know the average American family spends $209.38 per month on dinners at restaurants and $173.62 on buying lunch? $188.68 on drinks. It's none of you, right? $90.57 per month on cable TV. Some of you spend a lot more than that, I bet. $23.24 on apps on your phone per month. $45.50 on streaming service. And in just a few days, Disney Plus comes out. Those jerks. $20.25 per month on coffee. So if you add those up, it's about $10,000 a year on eating out and apps and cable TV. entertainment and food. And food is entertainment in our society. So entertainment is $10,000 a year. And yet, 60% of adults couldn't cover a $1,000 emergency. We spend $10,000 in entertainment, but the average American also can't afford emergencies. You know how often $1,000 emergencies come up in your life? For me, so far throughout my adult life, it's about once every 6 months. It's another $1,000 emergency. And if I go a little bit longer without an $1,000 emergency, it means the next one's $2,000. Like, that's basically how it works. When my wife and I first got married, we first started trying to balance things out. We tried to do the Dave Ramsey plan where you get $1,000, and then step two is you pay off debt, and step three is you get 3 to 6 month savings. We never got past step one, because every time $1,000 ended up in our bank, we had another $1,000 emergency. It's like, that's not how it's supposed to work, but it's how it worked for us. And yet here's the other scary statistic, though. The average American who goes to an evangelical church and commits and gives any money to the offering gives $17 a week to it. So $10,000 on entertainment, no money for emergencies, which we all know is going to happen because that's what life is like, and we give $17 on average to the church. So $10,000 a year entertainment, $800 a year to the church. I'm not like saying this to say you need to give more money to the church. I'm saying we've got some weird priorities, right? The things that we know are going to happen, we would rather go out to eat instead of We'd rather go out to eat than not have as much stress when an emergency happens. That's basically what we're saying. Because you know how stressful a $1,000 emergency is if you have $1,000 in the bank? Not that bad. It's really annoying, but it doesn't like make you cry at night, right? Like, it doesn't cause fights as easily. Financial slavery may not be as much of a problem as which is we have a priority problem here. Now, I'm not just saying this to make you feel guilty. I'm not just saying this to inspire more giving. I'm trying to lay a foundation before we can get to this idea of mind your own business. I want to talk about minding our own God-given business, but here's the question. Can you even afford to run it? Can you afford to run whatever God has called you to do? Now, if this money talk so far is making you feel guilty, sometimes guilt's good. It inspires changes in behavior. So just saying, you can't get mad at me either for talking about money in the church, because Jesus did it way more often than I do. If you haven't noticed by now, about every November, I spend about 4 weeks or so at least. Last year's a little bit different because of our send campaign. But every November, I spend a few weeks talking about money. So on average, I spend 4-ish weeks a year talking about money. That's 8% of the sermons here, if I can do math on the calculator properly. You wanna know how often Jesus talked about money? 66% of his parables were about money. So don't get mad at me if I do it once a sermon series for a year. Jesus did it a whole lot more often than I do. You probably would not be happy if I did it as often as Jesus did. But then, hey, it's Jesus. You can't be mad at me for emulating him. And that's just the Gospels, too. If you do the whole Bible, money and possessions are talked about literally 5 times as much as prayer is talked about. Also 5 times as much as faith is talked about. God understands that where your treasure is, there your heart will be. There's this like weird shortcut between our wallets and our hearts and our brains. God understands that we humans constantly need reminders about money and things such as that because he knows we've got problems. Consider like the lies we tell ourselves about money and possessions. Here's the example. I need it. You were told that to yourself or your spouse? I need it. I already told you I borrowed the sermon series. It was written in 2011. You want to know the example that they used for the product that everyone needs? An iPod. When's the last time you cared about an iPod? I have 3 broken ones in the drawer next to my refrigerator where all the weird junk that I think I'll use eventually goes. Right? You have that drawer, right? There's 3 broken iPods in there, and in 2001, it apparently was the product that they were saying everyone needs to have it. That's not that long ago, right? Like, it's not. And now it might be an iPhone, it could be something else. I don't know what your product is. Usually for guys, it's something like a truck or a boat, maybe a fishing pole if you're not as crazy on spending. But there's these products that we need. Maybe it's a specific gun, and I need it. And it's, slow down here. Do you actually need that thing? You might end up with just a bunch of them in your closet that you never use, right? Maybe not boats, but... I grew up boating. Every weekend we'd be on the river. You know what boats do to your wallet? Not good things, let me tell you that. So another lie we tell ourselves besides just I need it is I'm stuck with it. And that's specifically talking about payments. Everyone seems to think that you're always going to have a car payment, and so what you need to do is just make it the lowest possible. That's a terrible idea. You know what lowest possible means? It means more interest, and you're going to pay twice as much for what the thing actually costs. And so the idea is, who cares if you have debt? Everyone has debt, so just make your payments as manageable as possible. You know, it's actually hard to figure out how much a phone costs nowadays because they've managed to finance those. You can't walk into a phone store and ask, how much does this phone cost? $15 a month. That's not what I asked. You actually want to buy it? And they actually have had this conversation with multiple phone store people, and their eyes get this big when I say, yes, I want to buy a phone. Like, how about you want to lease it? No. If I'm going to spend more than the amount of a phone in the lifetime of this phone, I want to have it at the end. Things like that. But anyways, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think you're going to always have payments, you are always going to have payments. You are. Something fun about my life is I've only ever had a car payment for a few months of my whole life. When I first got a car payment, I realized it was a terrible idea. And so I went crazy and got rid of the car payment, and I've never had one again. And that's like, people have looked at me like I'm crazy because I drive older cars or things like that. The two current cars I have right now are refurbished titles because I can't afford full price cars. And so I take cars that have been totaled in the past. I don't make payments on cars though. And that whole portion of my income is free. Why would I give a bank interest when I could pay it to myself? Like, I don't understand that. But credit card payments, loan payments, car payments, you'll always have debt. So just accept it. No, you don't need it. And you don't need to finance it either. Here, the borrower is slave to the lender, so don't make that normal. And so the sermon series is called Mind Your Own Business because of this principle. God has given you a business. He's given you seed resources to start a business. You have a job to do. You've been spiritually hired by God to be a steward of his finances and his possessions. And if you don't believe me, read that parable again that I started with out of Luke. I think it's chapter 16. This is what the kingdom of heaven is like. There are other parables that teach the exact same thing. The parable of the shrewd manager, where Jesus taught his followers that you are supposed to use money in this world in order to do good. Or the parable of the wise and foolish stewards, where Jesus taught his followers to be busy and make themselves useful with God's possessions before he returns. Or the parable of the talents, very much like the one I started with, where Jesus taught his followers that they are expected to use God's resources to produce more in this world. God has given you the gift of being able to manage a small portion of God's creation. It's actually part of what the image of God is that he has made us rulers over this earth, and he's given a chunk of it, and we should be acting like we're actually stewards of what he's given us. He expects you to grow the family business. You might only have a small piece of it, but it's your small business and he wants you to do something with it. But here's the truth of it. Small businesses usually fail. That's the truth of the business world, is small businesses almost always fail. The average small business fails. Most spiritual small businesses probably fail too. If you don't think the personal small business that God has granted to your life is failing, here's a thought experiment. If you hired someone to run all of your finances the same way that you manage all your finances, would you fire that person? If you would, you should fire yourself and start doing business differently with your finances for this. God wants you to mind your own business and do it well. He wants you to be a rock star with his job that he's given you. We're supposed to be thankful in November, so let's be thankful for what we've been given and the blessings that God has given us, and let's make a business plan and try to be as thankful as possible but being good stewards of it as possible and do best, practice the best ways that we can take care of what God has given us. If you give a toy to a kid and he immediately just slams it on the ground, was he very appreciative of that gift? No, you expect that they're going to like take care of it, right? That's what you want. I mean, sometimes kids do things like smash the toy. But we, too, should not just take God's gifts and spend them as quickly as possible and go into debt as quickly as possible with them or reprioritize them and smash them in the ground. Instead, we should take them and take care of God's gifts, especially if in a few weeks we're going to claim thankfulness over turkey. Right? We should be thankful for these things. And so let's be mindful of our own business. But now that I've said we need to figure out our priorities, we need to figure out debt and things like that, here's another thing we have to figure out, and that's, do we even know what we're in the business of? What are we in the business of here? What's the spiritual small business that God has called you to manage with his resources that he's letting you use for a while? So here's the big application point for the sermon. Here's what I want you to do. If you don't know it yet, figure out what your business is. That will help you reprioritize your life, hopefully, and your finances. What is your mission? Now, I'm not asking what is the church's mission. That's things like love people, generic phrases. Be salt and light on this earth. Go and make disciples. These are all good things. We just spent a bunch of sermons on this topic, right? Be connected to God through his Son, his Spirit, his saints, and his secular. But it's easy to get lost in the genericness and then never actually prioritize anything. So what is your specific piece of this? What is your piece of this business that God has called you to do? God's called you to do something. He's provided seed money in your life to do it. It might not be a whole lot of money, but he also gave you a body and a brain, which for most of you is actually something. That was a bad joke. I'm not trying to diss the whole room. What is God calling you to do? Here's one way to figure it out. What would it take for you to like uproot your family and move? If you were given like an extra $10 a month, would you move for that job? What if you're given an extra $1,000 a month? Would you move for that job? $10,000 a month, would you move for that job? Most of you are thinking, yeah, like I probably would do it for that much here. What kind of thing in your life wouldn't, if you were doing this job, but you were offered $100,000 a month for another job, what kind of thing would you say, no, I can't stop doing what I'm doing here? Is there anything in your life that you could think of like that and say, regardless of money, I could never uproot myself here? Here's another way to look at it. Is there a job you'd take a pay cut for? What if you were given $100,000 more each year to do just anything you want and money was no option? If money was no concern, what would you do? If money is a concern, how much of it gets in the way of a passion of yours? For me, this is easy. Like, this is my spiritual small business as preaching. I get the easy job, especially since it's a career that's a calling that's also a career. It makes it super easy for me. But I'd be lying to say that if like I wasn't ever contacted by other churches that have offered me more money. Or not all of you know this, but my household took about a 50% pay cut to start preaching here at Ridgeview. And so I'm not here for the money. Let me add, money's super helpful. But I'm not here for it, right? It would take an extremely clear call from God for me to do something different. An extremely clear call from God for me to leave Ridgeview. But is there something you'd take a pay cut for? Now, the problem is not all of our callings will double as careers. And so I'm very fortunate in that aspect. But is there something you could do at the same time as your career or coupled with the same job as your career that would bring fulfillment? My career is something that I'm using to gain assets because I know that this is my passion. Or my career is something that I'm able to do my passion through it. Is there anything like that? What could you start doing that would make you say, I would never stop doing this even if I was paid to quit? What slots like that? What is your vision that if you were allowed to start doing it, no amount of money would be able to buy you out of stopping that? That's one way to think about it here. But I'm asking this based off the assumption that you want to do God's will in your life. And so the question might be not computing very well. For some of us, I hope it's not a bad assumption, but I know that things, easy things like generosity, like helping others, supporting the church, and having less stress about how you could ever do those things, these are basic ideas behind what I'm talking about here. So I'm hoping you want to do something that's generous. Even if you don't know if it's your calling and passion, I still want to be able to be generous. Even if I don't know that I'm supposed to, I still want to be able to support this mission work that I love. Even if I don't know if it's like my super great calling, I still want to make sure that I take ownership of this church and I support it. But the thing I want us to do this week is figure out what you're meant for. What's the business that God is calling you to become CEO over? Is it just fostering kids in your home? That could definitely be one of these sorts of things. Is it going overseas to missions? Like James over there, something he didn't think he was going to be doing, but he's doing it now. Maybe talk smaller. Is it having the freedom to take a short-term mission trip? Because that still costs money, right? And costs vacation time, things like that. Is it adopting one or two or 30 of those Compassion or World Vision kids, you know, like the $30 a month children that you support? Is it adopting a bunch of those? Is it, maybe it could be something weird for some parents, it could be saying, I'm not going to take the free government-provided childcare education system, and instead I want to be able to focus on homeschooling my kids instead. Could be something like that. Is it having the financial freedom to be a stay-at-home parent so your business can be raising children? Is it investing? Maybe you don't have kids or young kids anymore, but maybe is it investing in another college student's education, maybe even not your own kids, so that they don't have to go into debt as much? That's actually happened in this church. I know of a college student that somebody learned that they were going into debt during their career, and so somebody contacted the church and said, can I anonymously help this kid's tuition? It could be something like that here. Maybe you don't adopt, but you pay for adoptions of other people's. Maybe you don't have the ability to take mission trips, but you pay for other mission trips to get done. There are people who don't preach at Ridgeview Christian Church, but you write me notes and you give me gift cards sometimes. And that's great, and it helps encourage me to keep doing that. Maybe your mission is just encouraging people, and so you want to make sure you've got the freedom to do it often. I know someone whose dream it was early retirement so that he could buy a van and fill it with work tools and just drive from widow's house to widow's house and be their handyman for free. Like, that could be a mission or a calling. Is it maybe making sure that Ridgeview can fulfill its vision by expanding our facilities? I don't know what your business of generosity is going to be for you, or evangelism should be, but I want you to pray about it this week. And if you can't figure it out, maybe just step back and say, I just want to be more salt and light on this earth. I don't know what my specific calling is, but I know I should be salt and light on this earth. And so maybe a starting point is to be like, I'd love to actually start tithing. Or I'd love to be the Christian at restaurants on Sundays that instead of leaving a Bible tract and angering the waitress, I give even mediocre service $50 or $100 as a tip. That would change waitresses' opinions of Christians on Sundays, wouldn't it? Because right now, Christians don't have very good stereotypes about how we tip on Sundays. And so it would really change the opinion if instead we decided to be crazy generous here. Wouldn't it be awesome if we had the financial freedom to pursue the business of generosity and the joy that God has called us to do? Here's the truth. God has given you everything you need to fulfill that vision. But here's the problem. Too many of us have those God-given resources that are meant to fulfill the visions and meant to fulfill our callings, and we've out-prioritized them, and we've out-prioritized God-given business plans. We've either buried them in the ground, we've hidden them in a handkerchief, or we've just gone into debt with them. And Proverbs 22:7 rings true. Instead of being free to take whatever calling God has offered us, we are chained to someone else's vision far too often. And in order to mind our own business, we have to work on the finance side of God's business plans in our lives first. And that's what the sermon series is going to be talking about. As we want to mind our business, it's going to require some stewardship here. I'm skipping a section since I know it's after 11:30. We'll talk about this throughout the weeks, but it's hard to get super intense about changing our priorities or getting out of debt unless you've got a strong drive for the why. And I want to say that I don't want to cover stewardship and finances just because, hey, I want you all to be rich. That'd be awesome, right? Or I don't want to make sure that the church gets into your pocketbooks and our budget's great. Like, that'd be awesome too. But that's not what it is. Instead, it should be the why. Why should I reprioritize my life so that so much isn't spent on entertainment? Why should I reprioritize my life so that I don't act that I don't go crazy, or that I go crazy to get out of debt? Or why should I listen to the biblical wisdom of management of resources? It's not to get rich. It's not to make you guys into better tithers. It's because I want you to be free to listen to God's calling in your life so that when God calls you, you can pick up the phone and say, how much and who? That's what I want us to be able to have the freedom to do. Instead of when you get a calling in your life, you see someone who needs generosity, and you go, let me see if I can find someone else for that. Because no one ever likes to be told by someone else what their calling is, right? It's not always a fun thing. It sometimes is important, but we don't want to be told, hey, go be generous to that person over there. But if we are slaves to our debtors, we are not free to be able to give away God's money to people who could be blessed by it. Our generosity businesses will suffer. And so I want us to get intense about minding our business, minding your own business. And we'll talk about that in the weeks to come in this sermon series. What amazing things is God calling you towards? Now let's prioritize that, and we'll talk about how to do that in the coming weeks. Let's pray. Father in heaven, we thank you for the chance to gather here. And we thank you that Scripture is filled with excellent pieces of wisdom for us on how to manage the resources with which you've blessed us. Help us to understand that we are stewards, and that you have called us to do many great things. Help us to be able to pick up the phone in our lives and say, who can we bless? Where can we be salt and light on this earth? We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, I talked about debt, and we'll talk about the concept of gazelle intense, which is going crazy to try to get out of your debt as fast as possible, trying to deliver yourself from a hunter even kind of concepts. But there's also another type of debt that we all have in our lives, and that's the debt of sin. The wages of sin is death. You can't pay off death, except by dying, and that's no fun. But Jesus died in our place, and he's paid off the wages of sin in your life and my life. And if you'd like to talk about that, I want to make sure to never close out a sermon without at least mentioning the gospel. And that's a much worse debt than any financial debt we can get ourselves into. And so if you'd like to talk about Jesus paying off the debt of your sin, feel free to come forward and talk to me as we finish this service with this last song. Let's stand.